welcome to the Upriser podcast. I'm your host, Clinton Bonner. Upriser focuses on technology conversations centered in the future of work and how new technologies are applied and how work evolves. The Upriser podcast is brought to you by Topcoder. So I'm wondering how many out there already know this name, John Windsor. If you're involved in studying or using on-demand freelancer talent as part of your workforce, you probably have come across his name and his story by now. For those who aren't familiar, you're in for a treat. John, in my opinion, is a godfather of the modern open talent movement. He has founded and grown some of the most successful crowd-powered companies in the history of on-demand talent, including the successful agency Victors and Spoils, which he sold to Havas. Currently, John is founder and CEO of OpenAssembly, a consortium and consultancy focused on helping enterprises transition into the future of work, with a focus on open talent workforce and cultural strategies. In November 2019, John delivered an insightful keynote at the Topcoder Innovation Summit held in Houston, Texas. He discusses the history of disruptions, understanding the coming waves and momentum behind the freelancer economy, and how to ride them forward to avoid the proverbial avalanche and stay ahead of your competition. From November 19, live at the Topcoder Innovation Summit, here is John Windsor's keynote address, Why Open Talent Ecosystems Are the Future. Enjoy.
Please help me welcome John Windsor.
Thanks for having me. I especially want to thank Mike and Clinton for having me up today. Thanks, Mike. This is kind of an amazing experience for me because this has been going since 2001, and I started my first open talent business in 2002, and I've always wanted to come to this event, but I've never had a chance to be here. Although I must tell you, I had a nightmare last night. Thanks, Adam. Now, Adam, when there was the parade of stars that came up, Adam was there giving me the stats and how talented these folks were and where they were from. And last night in the middle of the night, I kept waking up going, I'm in one of those slots right over there trying to compete with these guys, and I'm getting my butt kicked. So anyway, I made it through the night, and it's all good. Hopefully today I'll provide some context. I've been doing this a long time, and hopefully give you guys some ideas. There's some stories that I'm going to talk about that a lot of you guys know about, but I think I'll just try to level set and use those as a way to talk about some things. I think one of the things that's inspired me is there's been so much cool stuff going on in this industry for a long time. And really, what happened for us at OpenAssembly was that we all connected at the Crowd Academy last year, I guess it was a year and a half ago, at Harvard. And everybody looked at each other and said, you've been doing that? I've been doing that too. And it's amazing all these kind of connections we have and this ability that we had these kind of similar experiences without knowing each other. So hopefully this is kind of a dawn of a new era, and TCO 19 is a place that we can all share this stuff and go out and evangelize it and get aligned with what we talk about. I really love this idea of passion. So to start with, put yourself in my shoes. A few years ago, I was in Canada on a ski trip. It was an industry trip. I was in the board of directors of a company called Black Diamond, which is a pretty well-known outdoor company. And we had 200 years of experience. 14 of us were doing this ski trip, a backcountry ski trip. We're going to ski this new line on this mountain called Kapola Peak. And the first thing you do when you ski those kinds of things, right, just like in business, you do a plan, right? You try to think about, what's this going to be? I'm going to do all the safety stuff. In this case, it was a Rausch block test where you would test the snow and how deep it was and where the avalanche could, if there was a break, where it could break. We did all the testing. We had all the experts. We had all the knowledge. We had a really cohesive team. To ski this couloir, we had two folks that went out to a cliff that was about 50 feet, and the couloir was to the right. One at a time, we went down through the couloir, and in the 11th skier, a fracture happened. So it was pretty scary. A bunch of us were sitting around the corner. I had gone earlier, and I grabbed my oldest friend in the world and said, let's ride this out, because it was a small fracture. But unbeknownst to us, instead of this small fracture, which we see every day in business, right? We see these small fractures happening. Which way is it going to go? Are we going to be okay? We'll survive. And most of the time, 90% of the time, it's all good. Unfortunately, on this day, that little fracture caused a much bigger incident. And that was above the cliff band 100 feet. It fractured 9 feet deep and 1,000 feet across. And when that happened, the two folks that were standing on the cliff got swept over the cliff. The rest of us got swept down another 1,000 feet over another cliff band and ended up on a 75-foot debris pile. And on that debris pile, some of us were buried all the way. There were two people that were buried all the way. I was buried with my hand and my head out. And we started trying to, you know, do what we do in avalanches, assess the situation, try to figure out if everybody's okay. Fortunately, everybody was okay. And it really taught me, it was something that's so ingrained into my experience these days, that few minutes of really, really scary stuff, that no matter who you are, you will be disrupted. It doesn't matter how successful we are, what business we're in, but you will be disrupted. My great-grandfather, my grandfather, and my dad were all in the newspaper business, right? Great business. I was going to go into the newspaper business, but I was the radical kid and decided to move away from small town in Illinois. And I'm really, really glad that I did, right? Here's the chart of what's happened in the ad industry. And while this didn't extend further than 2010, my sense is that this chart would go way down. If you think about it, 1950 revenue was the same in 2010, that it got clobbered, right? And being in that business, we understood that there was this kind of, you know, oh, it's going to be okay. Well, we can do it a little bit longer. It's going to be fine. All the while, new technology of the internet was happening, right, every day until there was a crash. So really, we think about every business built on analog business models is being replaced by competitors built on digital business models that remove more friction for their customers. And for me, what I see today is now micro-entrepreneurs on platforms like TopCoder and freelancers are competing and removing even more friction. So what is open talent? I think one of the things we've struggled with and one of the things we talked about a lot last year at the Harvard event is trying to figure out what we call this. For a long time, we called it crowdsourcing, and I think that's a great term. Although my experience in the advertising business and some of the stuff that I've built is it's really scary to people, right? I think that's one of the issues with gig right now. Gig has a lot of negative headwinds that the word does, and it scares a lot of people. We prefer to think about it as open talent, and that encompasses crowdsourcing, open innovation, gig, Uberization. Back when I started my first company, we used to call it co-creation. So lots of different terms, and I think what's important to think about as a group is how we align each other in a similar terminology to allow this to be adopted and scale. Okay, who's heard the story of the potato chip? I know it's been used a lot, and it's one of the ones that I love personally, right? Many people? Yeah, a few people? Yeah, a couple people out there. So, potato chip company has a problem, right? Been doing innovation for a while, wants to remove oil from their potato chips. And the way mechanical engineers have figured that out is shake the rack, right? We shake the rack a little bit more. The problem is at a certain point, that rack breaks all the chips. So we went out to a platform, and they decided, we've got to figure this out. We need a new perspective, right? One of the things I think that's so interesting, it's always captured my imagination with this project and this story, is that essentially it was really the reframing of the question that made this magical, right? Instead of removing oil from a potato chip, it was removing a viscous substance from a thin wafer, right? By doing that, all of a sudden, it opened up lots of other folks that could think about it in new ways. And in this case, a violinist figured it out. Right? A violinist that knew that when she played a violin at a certain frequency, she could actually affect break glass and do things like that. And so her thinking was, if you could get a sound at a certain frequency in the chamber, you could actually, at the same frequency that the oil was resonated, it would actually jump off the chips. So a really novel solution to a problem. Some of the context in the market, we've seen big growth, and we're seeing that the freelance and gig economy is dominating the marketplace, along with IoT spending, and all kinds of folks are starting to use it. Although we don't hear about it every day, I think everybody is using freelance and gig tools in some way. We're seeing explode, although not everybody's figured it out yet, it's definitely exploding, and a lot of folks are using it. We're still, though, in the nascent stage of it. One of the things that we think about a lot is that I think, you know, doing this for a long, long time, when I started my companies back in 2001, it's almost like I had to throw Molotov cocktails against the incumbents, especially in the business that I was in, the advertising business, right? So that's kind of, to me, what happens with innovators. Those people that are at the cutting edge, you really got to make a lot of noise to be a little bit radical to even think about what's happening. And then early adopters come along and are really amazing thought leaders and kind of can frame it up in a way to understand it a little bit. But in a lot of the research we're doing at OpenAssembly is really we're seeing that the people in the majority or in the early majority really want things that are useful and that are ordinary and boring. They just want to get their jobs done, right? They don't want to really reinvent a system. And I think that's where we are. There's this chasm between early adoption, yeah, it works, we know it works, and making it useful and ordinary and boring. My sense is that we can do that with great things like TCO Open, is create that understanding and create that bridge across the chasm. So one of the things that I've been really excited about, I had a company called Victors and Spoils that I sold to a company called Havas, as Michelle mentioned. And one of the things that happened at Havas is I just got the passion got sucked out of me, right? I tried to do some innovative things. It was really difficult for me to do. Fortunately, the guys at Lish asked me to come join them as executive in residence, and we started thinking about how do we accelerate this? How do we make this more ordinary and boring? And I'll share some stories that we've kind of been working on at Lish and some of the things we've been doing at OA. So we've done over 700 projects over the last few years. So what we've learned at Lish, the first thing is it works. The folks, Lynn and Steve, were nice enough to allow us to do some analysis on the 314 projects that have been completed. So 94% of the projects were successful, 74% of the solutions were implemented, and a cost savings of $24 million. So great ideas, we know it works, and how do we make it happen with adoption? Another slide that I love from NASA is this kind of adjacent knowledge is more powerful than expert knowledge. Think about the violinist, right? Never done any mechanical engineering before, but had this really interesting insight about how to remove something from a thin wafer, remove that viscous substance. And the other thing we're thinking about is that when I started my crowdsourcing company, Victors and Spoils, and before that, Radar Communications, we always thought that crowdsourcing or open innovation or open talent was the only solution, right? So discovered this hammer and everything had to be solved by an open solution. I think what we're discovering is it's more of an ecosystem approach. Like, it's not to say that it's internal versus external or open's better than closed. It's really trying to create an ecosystem so that you have talented folks that are doing curation inside the company. You've got freelancers that are doing work with those folks. They're creating internal crowds to share that knowledge inside the company. And then you're also using external contests to really pour the gas on innovation. Elizabeth, Jeff, Jin, and Kareem did a great paper last year, Sustaining Open Innovation Through a Center of Excellence. It was really inspiring. And when we looked at it with Jin works with us at Open Assembly, as well does Kareem. We wanted to try to build that out and commercialize it. So we worked with Topcoder and really thought about, you know, how do we focus on building these phases out? So we really believe that the way to adopt a lot of this stuff is through a four-step process: learn, experiment, build, and scale. This last year, we worked with Adam Sandlin and Mike to create what we call an OAQ, Open Assembly Quarterly, that explained the research and made it really applicable. Gene, our editor-in-chief, kind of created that and did a great job. So I think we've got some, do we have some copies of that here, Mike? Oh, right there, there we go. Yeah, so enjoy that. I think that it's starting the conversation of how we adopt this stuff and how we adopt open talent and use it in an ecosystem way that's not scary, that's more ordinary and boring and really useful. But it's the start of a conversation. We're still really early in the journey. Lots of good content in there and lots of good case studies. We've got lots of great stories from folks that are along the journey. One of my favorite things that's happening in the marketplace right now is Deloitte's investment in Expertify. We're doing a case study, Mike Tushman and I, for an HBS case study right now. And one of the things I loved about a recent conversation for the case study was Harpreet Singh's point of view that it currently takes 4 to 5 months to hire a data scientist, and he's trying to cut that to 4 to 5 days. To me, that's the power of what we're talking about here, is how do we take the friction out of a system? And I love what Rich is here, and he did this project with Topcoder and tried to make, you know, fracking safer by creating a database, a scheduler. So once he did that, they put it out on the PDS Energy, gave it to PDS Energy to create an interchange to allow other energy companies to understand what's happening in the scheduler and get things on the right schedule. so that it's a safer experience with fracking in certain zones. So really great project and one that it's been inspiring to us at Lish. So what's the ideal state? I love what NASA's doing, Lynn and Steve and the rest of the team. I think the idea of creating an ecosystem is a really, really important thing, and these guys are pretty far along. When we look at things on the learn, experiment, build, and scale, I really believe that what NASA's done is it's furthest out, and they've really had the most experience. I'm certainly, we've done the most examination of that at Lish, but it's really awesome to see how they've set up the system. They've played with so many different things, and they're really scaling their experiences and sharing it. And I think that's one of the most important things that we've learned here, is that we're all in this together, and this is nascent, and we've got to really be willing to be open and transparent and share our experiences with everybody. I love the idea of this NASA at work as well. I mean, the power of having 20,000 people participate in 140 challenges with a big success rate. I think it's a really great way for all of us to think about, hey, maybe my company's not ready to go do contests, and the freelance gig thing's a little scary, but man, I could really empower my internal employees to do a lot of really cool stuff and use the great technology that's out there to do that. So, you know, we know it works. It's better, it's faster and cheaper. We've created this great structured process, but still, adoption's really, really difficult, right? We see that over and over again. We've probably done 15 projects in the last couple of years where we get going with the company. They're really excited. They've got all the right tools. They've got an amazing team. They're pushing it in the right way. And it just dies, right? Over and over again. Certainly, that was my experience at Havas, right? We created this tool, Ed Victor's and Spoils, and David Jones from Havas hired me to kind of implement that tool. It was a really simple question, right? It was like, we usually give a client in advertising 10 creatives for millions of dollars for a client like Peugeot, say, in Paris. Why couldn't we just create a digital platform that allowed anybody inside Havas, our 20,000 employees, to lean in on a project? If somebody in Shanghai thought there was an interesting project, why couldn't they lean into a creative project or have a strategic insight for Peugeot? The problem wasn't the people at the C-level or the folks at the lower level who are the creatives and the strategists. It was the 350 local CEOs that killed the idea, that they were threatened, right? That threatened their identity. I'm in Shanghai, I'm the CEO of Shanghai, Havas. I've been working really hard for 20 years as a creative, and how dare this young 22-year-old gets to work on a global brand like Peugeot? I deserve to do that, right? I'm not gonna let them take the shortcut. So those are the issues we have to work with. Like, how do we overcome those issues, those cultural issues? And that's the problem, right? Adoption is really a cultural process. In order to succeed, I think we need to change two things. First, we're in the midst of a passion crisis, and I see that every day. So many of my friends that are in big companies that are just left big companies, they really have been in this, what I would call, passion desert, right? You're in the big company, your day's full of meetings, you've got a lot of risk mitigation, you got to focus on just doing the bureaucratic stuff you have to do every day. And at the end of the day, you might have an hour or two to do the real work that you need to do, right? So how do we overcome that? How do we overcome these passion deserts? If we think about the passion economy, that's what I loved about last night, right? There are all these passionate people, they're doing amazing work that scared the hell out of me in that nightmare last night. But you go inside a big company, you get stuck. It is slow. That was my experience at Havas. And there are all these politics, you don't know exactly what's happening and how to do that. So how do we overcome that? You know, you see in the entrepreneurial world and what we see here is a really good example of passion. So many great folks that are really focused on it. And I think one of the ways to start thinking about it is to infuse that. And we're really lucky that we get to infuse that for us. I'm certainly inspired by the passion I saw last night and really psyched to watch the contest in the competition over the next couple days. But I think take that in, take that energy, take that passion back to where you're from. I also think it demands a new mindset, right? That we're always stuck in those mindsets by the kind of traumas and the things that have happened to us in life. And certainly for me, after the avalanche, it was really big and scary, and for years and years, everything looked dangerous, right? Every time I hopped on a ski slope, I was really nervous that something was gonna slide, there would be a little movement or a little shift. should I do it, should I not? Do I have the confidence? It really, really shook my confidence and all the folks that were there. But over the years, I understood it wasn't really, it was more about my mindset. It was more about kind of what I brought to the situation. And maybe instead of thinking about those avalanches, those really traumatic things in our lives, we really need to think about avalanches in the aquatic sense, right? I'm a surfer as well, and I've had a chance to surf a bunch of really big waves. And it's really fun, and it's scary, and it feels exactly like an avalanche when you have a 20 or 25-foot wave behind you, and it's coming at you. And you know, the possibility of devastation is probably as likely as an avalanche. But it's amazing. You have a tool, right? You have a skill set. You've been practicing for a long time to understand what you do in the context of this aquatic avalanche. And in this case, it's amazing when you have the skills matched with the right place at the right time, you can get on the board and you can find the sweet spot. And there's magic in that sweet spot, right? It's not just you moving, it's actually your environment moving. That's one of the things I love about surfing. And I think that's what I'm feeling here, not only at TCO, but also in this whole marketplace, that there's this movement, there's this energy, there's this growth that's really happening. So my question is, how do we ride it? How do we take that energy? How do we find the sweet spot of this open talent marketplace and all do it together, right? How do we go forward with common knowledge, excitement, and really ride the wave of this momentum? So thanks for having me. I'm really looking forward to the next couple of days and really inspired by it. And Adam, thanks for scaring me to half to death last night.
If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe to the Upriser podcast. It's available wherever you get your podcasts, so it's pretty easy. And of course, I encourage you to follow us out on social at Upriser, UPRISOR on Twitter. And also, I would encourage you to follow Top Coder at Top Coder, TOPCODER.